Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Flynn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
Welcome to episode 224 of the Need to Know podcast. This will be the last podcast for 2019. And this will be the last podcast for the decade. It's a bit scary now that we're moving into 2020. A lot's happened in this year, and we do have a lot to be thankful here on the podcast. Now, Brenton is off frolicking around on his holiday, so you've just got me to give you a bit of an interview. We will hear from Brenton with the interview that does follow this intro. So to kick things off, I'd firstly like to thank all the listeners for their support. Through 2019, it's been great to have you on board. Hopefully you've got some value out of this and you've enjoyed listening to our regular podcast. Now, it is very pleasing to say that we started off 2019 on episode 199 and this is episode 224. So we've managed to do about 25 or so episodes in a year. That's roughly about one every 2 weeks. So we've been very regular, and I do have young Brenton to thank for that, to be able to constantly get the content out to you. So again, it's been very good and been very regular. And again, I hope people have got value from it. Now, our most popular episode was episode 218 with Tony Redmond speaking about Teams and Exchange. No surprise there. Some of the other episodes have also performed very, very well, and it's a testament to the value that people are seeing, listening along, and again, thanks to everybody for doing that. I'd also like to take the opportunity to thank everybody who is a CIA Ops patron. Again, you have helped build the community and make it what it is today. Now, if you are interested in becoming a patron, you can visit www.ciaopspatron.com, make it your New Year's resolution, join the community, and get all the goodness around the Microsoft Cloud offerings in there. So what I thought I'd do, rather than do the normal news and updates, I would give you a bit of a wish list and then some, I think, some important tech items to watch out for in 2020. So to kick things off, what I would like to put on the wish list for 2020 around the Microsoft 365 business product are three main asks. Now, I think the number one ask would be that we get a consolidated console for Windows Defender endpoint. So it'd be great to have a consolidated console in the basically the admin center that would show the status and allow some controllability over the Windows Defender endpoints on our Windows 10 machine. So again, we have the high-end version, which is Microsoft Defender ATP. And again, that's an E5 SKU. We probably don't need all the functionality in there, or it'd be lovely to have in Microsoft 365 Business. However, some of that functionality would be great to see rolled down into the business product. So at the very minimum, we can look and make sure that all our endpoints are communicating, that they're all up to date, that they've run their scans, that there are no viruses or malware or alerts or warnings that need to be taken advantage of or need to be addressed. And then basically the next step up would be if we had some, even some basic controls. So the ability to run a force scan or potentially look at managing alerts and things like that, that would be great to have in a single console. So ask number one, or wish number one for 2020 would be to have some sort of consolidated Defender management console in Microsoft 365 Business. Now, the next wish would be to have Microsoft Cloud App Security also included in Microsoft 365 Business. Now, Cloud App Security gives us a much better management overview, reporting, alerting of the events inside a tenant. And at the moment, this is an add-on. So we have three products. We have Cloud App Discovery, which is part of Azure AD P1. We have Office 365 Cloud App Security. and we have the high-end Microsoft Cloud App Security. Now, they all have different sets of features. Now, it'd be great to have the Microsoft Cloud App Security, the high-end version, in Microsoft 365 Business. It is part of the E5 SKU, so we understand why it may not be included, but at the moment, I would suggest that Office 365 Cloud App Security makes a very good and necessary add-on to Microsoft 365 Business. It gives you that alerting ability. It gives you the ability to upload the logs from your firewall devices into it for analysis. Again, allows you to set up alerts for things like mass downloads, impossible travel, and look at things like OAuth tokens as well. So I think it would be great to see. Now, we can buy Office 365 ATP as an add-on. That's roughly around $3 to $4 Australian dollars to a tenant per user. So I think that, again, I'd like to see that sort of value rolled into Microsoft 365 Business. Again, we don't see that in some of the other SKUs, and I think it would really help make that product more complete, especially from a monitoring point of view. Now, with that in mind, it sort of makes me wonder the long-term viability or the long-term direction of the E3 SKU in Microsoft 365. Again, we have the E5, which I understand has all the value in it, has the high-end features and services. Microsoft 365 Business obviously has a limited set of those, but they're still very, very feature-rich. E3 seems to be a little bit in between there. I think that it will be good to see potentially a Microsoft 365 Enterprise SKU being E5 and a Microsoft 365 Business SKU, and also basically having more of the functionality moved into the business and then potentially retiring the E5, so we've got that delineation. Again, these are just wishes, but to me, in the marketplace, I don't see a lot of sales for Microsoft 365 E3. I do see E5 and Business, so I would suggest that that's where the resources would probably be most effective. Now, the final wish, again, is something for Microsoft 365 Business. We have probably about 80% of the features of Azure AD P1 inside Microsoft 365 Business already. I think it would be good to include all the features of Azure AD P1 to remove some of the confusion, to add additional functionality to the product, because at the moment it's like, okay, what features are included, what aren't included. So we now have conditional access. That's part of Microsoft 365 Business, but for example, Dynamic Groups isn't. Now, again, both of those features are part of Azure AD P1, and this is where the confusion comes in. It's okay, what's included, what's not included? I think it will be better from a licensing and also a product point of view. So the whole of the Azure AD P1 is now part of Microsoft 365 Business. And this goes back to my previous point about this then creates this curiosity around E3. Because E3 does have the full Azure AD P1 in it. But I think, again, looking at splitting the SKUs to an enterprise and a business SKU, that moving the Azure AD P1 features into Microsoft 365 Business and then potentially looking at retiring the E3 license makes a lot of sense, and again gives that clear delineation and also removes a lot of that confusion. We see so much confusion around, okay, what does Microsoft 365 Business include when it comes to Azure AD P1? So we get two-way password sync, conditional access, trusted IPs, and a range of other features, probably about 80% of Azure AD P1, but we don't have some key features, like I said, dynamic groups is one of the ones that pops to mind. So I think simplifying that and, again, saying, yes, the whole SKU of Azure AD P1 appears in Microsoft 365 Business would make it a lot easier for people to understand and be additional features that could be provided to that product that are certainly needed. So in summary, my wish list for 2020 for Microsoft 365 Business would be, firstly, a consolidated Defender console that would link all our endpoints and allow us to perform monitoring and management of our AV and our malware protection. I'd like to also see Cloud App Security come into Microsoft 365 Business to give us better monitoring and, again, give us this higher level of alerting and intelligence. And the third would be to have the full Azure AD P1 become part of Microsoft 365 Business to simplify the SKU and, again, provide additional features that customers can use and also resellers can implement. Now, given that that's a wish list, I think that there's also call here to have a think about what will be the important tech when it comes to 2019. So I've got three items here which I would suggest that you really need to pay attention and going to see a lot of emphasis, in my opinion, going forward. Now, it's hard to limit that down to just three items, but this is, again, what I think are the three most important things that you should pay attention to when it comes to technology from Microsoft. So the very first one is Windows Virtual Desktop. There is no doubt that the move to the cloud is also now beginning to encompass moving the desktop. So a lot of users are wanting a consistent environment that has all their apps, has all the control, but they can get to it on any device, being iOS, Android, Windows 10, or whatever. So I think that the Windows Virtual Desktop provides that. It gives us the ability to provide desktop access to a user on any device, plus app publishing, so the user doesn't even see the desktop. They just run the app on any device they have. So Windows Virtual Desktop takes advantage of things like Azure, and it is a growing area of Microsoft and their focus as well. And again, it's basically going to allow you to do this virtual desktop as a service or on demand. So again, implemented correctly, I think it can form a major benefit to a business. Again, it's probably a little bit early days, but I think we're going to see a very, very rapid maturing and focus on this product from Microsoft moving forward. So my number one item, which I think you should be paying attention for to in 2020, would be Windows Virtual Desktop. Now, the second item would be the Power Platform, particularly around Power Apps and Power Automate. So again, what we're seeing now to an extent is that Microsoft has sort of stabilized its services. It's got good uptake of Exchange, SharePoint, and Teams. And now the add-on value is going to be around adding custom apps to that, sorting that out to manage or to work for particular businesses. The way that we do that is with the Power Platform. So the Power Apps gives us the ability to have a nice front end, an intelligent front end over our data. We can use Power BI to do dashboard and reporting. We can use Power Automate to start automating things without necessarily having to deep dive into code. Now, the great thing about the Power Platform is that it can also integrate with on-prem. We can use the data gateway and integrate that to on-prem. So there are lots of opportunities there, I think, to start automating standard business processes. So this will come in more detail when I speak about some of the general things a bit later. But I think that we see a lot of businesses out there that are using technology, but really are using it the most basic means. So they're file open, file close. They're not really going to that next level. They're not looking to automate to make their life better. They're just adding another tool which potentially replaces and may even add more work than it did previously. So again, these Power Apps and the Power Platform is designed to make life easier, to again be crafted to a solution that suits the organization. It does require some work, it does require some investment to understand and appreciate and implement these, but the benefits are going to be very, very significant. So the number two item I'd have here to pay attention to invest some time in when it comes to technology in 2020 is going to be the Power Platform, particularly Power Apps and Power Automate, the flow side of things, to look at customizing the standard Microsoft 365 interface for the business that you're in, and again, customize it to suit your exact needs. Now, the third one here, I think, is a little way out. We expect it potentially at the end of 2020. It may roll over in 2021. So it is a long wait, but I would suggest that the announcement by Microsoft of their Neo and their Duo devices, so these are these smaller form factor Surface style devices, basically that are foldable devices. One is obviously the sort of a tablet size, iPad sort of, you know, a book style thing, and another one is a smaller phone with the integration of a SIM in there. I think both of these are going to fill a need in the market. Now, that seems a bit strange. There are so many devices out there, but just going on what I've seen, what I understand, the tech talk that I see around from people, I think there is going to be, these devices are going to be very, very successful. Now, again, that's looking a long way out. We're making a lot of assumptions here, but I would suggest that is something to keep your eye on for come sort of, you know, Christmas time 2020. I think these devices, again, are going to be very popular. They're going to be something that customers want. They're going to fill a need. They're going to work, hopefully, quite well from what Microsoft has said and the success they've had with the Surface line. So, again, keep an eye on the Microsoft release of these new devices, the Neo and the Duo, coming out towards the end of 2020. So, in summary, the important tech that I would suggest that you keep an eye on for 2020, most importantly, is Windows Virtual Desktop, the Power Platform, so Power Apps, Power Automate, and also, I think, keep an eye on the Neo and Duo devices coming from Microsoft towards the end of 2020. Now, to round off from me for this year, before we get into our interview, I thought I'd talk about two general trends here. Now, these are two things I think you should be paying attention to and thinking about, but we can't really tie them down to specifics. So the analogy here is, if you think about a number of years ago, we talked about the cloud. What is the cloud? Is the cloud Microsoft 365? Is the cloud AWS? Is the cloud something like Azure? Well, yes, it is, but they're specific parts of it. So I think these two topics here are very general, but they are worth considering and then start breaking down and having a think about in more detail what's relevant, because I think these are very important overarching trends. Now, the first one is something that, again, Microsoft's beginning to use a lot in its marketing speak, and you want to take this away and have a think about it. And okay, how does this apply? It's probably something important to consider, but how does it apply to me? So again, don't necessarily just take it on face. Sit down and have a think about it. But I think the overall trend here around this concept of tech intensity is really, really important. Now, one of the things that I see when I'm out consulting and working with business and resellers is that the vast majority of people are simply using the defaults when it comes to technology. There's not a lot of digital skill out there when it comes to these products. People aren't diving in deep. They're just taking a product and using it basically as a one-for-one replacement to something they were doing before. They're not looking into how they can really optimize it, how they can go deep with the product, how can they really make it work for them. Yes, there are time constraints, I understand that, but at the end of the day, people end up paying for a lot more technology than they probably need, because some of the applications that they have probably already encompass what they have. They just haven't gone deep enough into them. So again, examples I use are, if you look at the desktop apps like Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, they have a macro-based language and automation language behind them that allow you to automate a lot of tasks. With Excel, there's a real lot that you can do when you start tying in this automation with macros and so on in that environment. So again, few people actually go in and look at it. So I think this concept of tech intensity means look at the technology that you've got or thinking about or looking to implement, and then really go deep on it. Make it really work for you. Really, really use that to have a differentiation point from your business. Now, this can be difficult. Yes, this requires an investment, but I think companies that do that are the ones that are going to benefit going down the line here. So the first important trend is to consider this concept of tech intensity. How does that apply to your business? How much more could you be looking at this technology, really implementing, going deep, getting the most out of it, rather than just continually adding technology for technology's sake? So again, take some time in 2020, I would suggest, to have a think about what technologies make sense, how can we get more out of them, and again, what's involved in really, really maximizing the return we're getting for our technology investment. Now, the other one that I've been spending some time on thinking about, trying to work out how it fits in, is AI, artificial intelligence. Now, very much a buzzword at the moment. There's lots and lots of discussion around it, lots of thoughts around it, and like the cloud, it is a very broad term. So AI can be used in many, many instances. In large respects, it's talking about the ability to take large data sets and look at consistency, look at patterns in there. Now, that can be applied in many, many applications, and Microsoft, again, is beginning to implement, infuse AI, as it says, into all its products. Now, the more you look at it, the more benefits that can be derived from. But again, there's an investment that needs to be made. There's an understanding that you need to have is, okay, how is this going to work for my business? How can I actually reap the benefits? What tools do I need to understand and implement to get the best out of it? Now, I think, again, AI comes down to this tech intensity, comes down to this automation we talked about with Power Apps and the Power Platform. Is this AI, again, is a add-on to this and is going to be important to understand. So I think the people that do spend the time, do invest, begin to understand this, are going to be the ones that reap the benefit. They're going to be able to pull out lots and lots of hidden information from data sets that other people can't because they've invested the time in learning and understanding this. So again, if you haven't thought about this for 2020, start again thinking about what AI, what role AI can play. Yes, it is a generic term, but so was cloud back in the day. There are some specifics inside there that you can start implementing even inside things like Microsoft 365 that are going to make life easier. They're going to make it smarter. It's going to make your life easier by leveraging this sort of technology. So an example I can give you is something like Azure Sentinel. So you can feed lots and lots of signals, lots and lots of event logs into Azure Sentinel and then have it chew through the data and just give you an analysis reporting of what you should have paid attention to. So rather than going through and looking at logs or waiting for alerts, a whole range of alerts to pop out, Azure Sentinel will look across a range of signals and say, well, I've had these three items pop up. Maybe you should take attention to this. So again, have a look and have a think about and do some research and understanding as to what role AI could play. Yes, it is a nice big generic term. It's thrown around willy-nilly as a marketing term, but I think it's going to become more and more important as we go forward, especially for progressive organizations. So again, much like the cloud was back in the day, so now we're going to see this growth in those that understand and appreciate and start using the benefits that AI does provide. So the summary that I've got for you, the general trends to think about technology would be tech intensity, being learning how can we make more of the technology we've got rather than just adding technology. How can we really, you know, get the technology in our business and really make it so it's making a difference for our business and making our lives and our customers' lives better. And AI, yes, it's a big generic term, but it's being incorporated in more and more products. How can we take advantage of that inside the business and again utilize that to improve basically the lives of everybody. So they're my wishes for 2020. They're my specific important technologies for 2020 and also some general considerations when it comes to technology for 2020. So we'll revisit those probably another 12 months and see what people think about that and also see what success or what's changed in that period. But for now, again, I wish you all the best for 2020. Thank you for, again, being a listener. Remember that you can always provide us feedback as usual via feedback@needtoknow.cloud. You'll find me at DirectorCIA on the Twitter, at ContactBrenton. And also, if you're wanting to give us some feedback directly on the socials, it's at N2KPodcast on Twitter and Facebook. Now, with that, why don't we get into this interview with Brenton?
Hello, everybody. I'm here with Patrick Gray. He runs a podcast called Risky Business, which has been going for quite a while. One of our past guests, Troy Hunt, has mentioned Patrick's podcast in the past, and that's what initially got me listening to it, and I started listening to it because of that. And then I reached out to him, being a fellow Aussie, and said, hey, I'm interested in getting all sorts of different people on the show. We love diversity here. We love getting difference of opinion. And I thought, well, let's see if Patrick wants to be on my show. And turns out he does. So this is Patrick. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, everyone. I'm Patrick Gray, and I host a podcast called Risky Business, which is all about security and something which I've been that's something I've been doing for a very long time.
How long?
I think we're coming up on, I think, 13 years, but I'd have to double check. It's been, yeah, no, it's 13 years. 13 years.
Oh, wow. So how did you get started doing podcasts? It wasn't a very common thing back then, I suppose. There was no video back then because the internet was so bad. But where did you get started with podcasts?
So I first started writing about InfoSec in around 2001, right? So I've been doing this quite a while. But I made the jump to audio in 06, 07, essentially because at the time, there were only a handful of sort of stories that you could write about security, right? Because you needed to keep the, you needed to keep them pitched at least a general IT audience, right? So at the time I was writing for newspapers like The Age, The Sydney Morning Herald, The Australian Financial Review had an IT magazine that I'd write for as well. I was contributing to Wired.com and, you know, a few US outlets, Australian Men's Style, believe it or not.
Really?
I was writing features for Men's Style. But look, at the time I had, I'd moved to a small town. I'd moved to Byron Bay, in around 2004. And, you know, I was basically freelancing, writing these same stories, right? Which is like, here's a new virus or here's a new bug or, you know, here's some security issue or whatever. But it was like, you could never really go that deep. So at that point, by that stage, I'd already been doing, you know, InfoSec reporting full-time for 5 years. And I thought, you know, I want to do something here that, you know, is for the specialists, because I already had a real interest in InfoSec. And at the time, you know, I mean, everyone was doing blogs, right? Everyone was doing blogs and newsletters. But I had done a bit of community radio as a teenager, and I thought, you know what, I might do a podcast. And I just had that idea. And then it was an actual idea in the shower. And then I ran out, picked up the phone, and I rang a marketing manager who I knew, who worked for then, Cybertrust, which I think has been acquired into oblivion by now, like so many security companies. And I just rang her up and I'm like, hey, you know, I just had this idea to do a podcast. You know, do you think anyone would sponsor it? And she said, you know what, like that would be actually a really valuable thing for us to do media training for our internal staff. So sign us up for 12 episodes. And it was, you know, it was a token fee at the time, but you know, by the hour it worked out pretty well. It worked out about the same as my, as some of my freelance work. And that's kind of how the podcast got started. Now, at the time it was supposed to be something that I could do a day a week that would, you know, maybe make me a couple $100 that I could then, you know, not do some of the more boring work I'd been doing, like non-security stuff, like writing about storage, which the term among tech journalists is snorage. Because back then, you know, storage stories were all the rage. But yeah, look, long story short, that's how the podcast started, is, to do something that wasn't a newsletter, but something that could be a bit more of a deep dive for people in security. And I think within about 6 months, it became more or less my full-time job, which I did not expect.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's really rapid. So how many listeners did you need before you could take it full-time?
So that's the weird thing, is it picked up this audience of fairly influential people in certain positions in within vendors, right, where they more or less became benefactors rather than, you know, advertisers or you know, trying to really push the marketing stuff heavily. They just thought it was good and they wanted to support it. So, you know, initially I'd have like four sponsors and each one of them would get a quarter of the slots over the year. And that was sort of how it started. But that's essentially what happened. So it wasn't really, no one was really looking at the numbers. And I guess it's just gradually grown and grown and grown. And now we have quite a lot of listeners.
Yeah, like 15,000 episodes, something like that, is it? Or it's a bit more than that?
It's a fair bit more than that. I mean, we're looking at sort of something between, I think, 23 and 26,000 per podcast.
Yeah, you need to update your LinkedIn profile, Patrick.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's what I mean, though, right? It's just gradually increased.
Yeah, that's great. And from all over the world as well.
Yeah, I think it's only about 15% Australia, New Zealand, whereas early on it was obviously a little bit, more skewed to the to Australians. But it's mostly the US. It's about it's funny actually, because I talk to friends who've worked in, you know, who work in digital publishing for, you know, some of the IT news outlets, and my geographic breakdown is pretty similar to theirs. It's, you know, it's like 50% US, 15% Australia, New Zealand, and then the rest everywhere.
Yeah. Oh, that's really interesting. So why did you decide to get into InfoSec? There wasn't many people back in those days. We had a cybersecurity consultant on this one day, and he said back when I started in IT security, it wasn't even called cybersecurity. It was called network security. And you were out there racking and stacking, and you're doing all this stuff. So it wasn't really the sexy thing that it is now. It was very much like, oh, those guys from cybersecurity. So what is it about cybersecurity that really got you interested?
It was a couple of things. I think mostly it's because there was a group of hackers at my high school. I mean, yep. If I'm going to be really honest, like that's why. And they were always, man, those guys were always getting suspended for doing the stupidest shit to the school BBS, right? Because we actually had a BBS at our school, and they did things that I won't repeat, but that were quite silly. So that was some of them. And, you know, quite often they were doing things like, you know, coding up interesting stuff in assembly, and like they were just those type of people, right? And they were doing all sorts of illegal crap as well, like, you know, a lot of freaking and various bits of exploring and stuff. And, you know, I've never been a really, you know, technical person, but I would shoulder surf these guys as a teenager, watch what they were doing. And it's, you know, how can you not be interested in that? It was fascinating.
Yeah, no, it's certainly interesting. You see a lot around that sort of gray hat, you know, where is the line that a lot of, you know, hardcore black hat hackers have all the same toolkit that white hat hackers have and do the same sorts of things every day, you know, particularly.
But there were no toolkits really back then. You know, I mean, I'm going back way before. I'm going to the 90s then. And it's, you know, I mean, there was barely even an internet really in Australia. I mean, there was, but it's like, it was expensive and slow, and there wasn't really a lot there. But it, yeah, I mean, it was just they were crazy kids, let's put it that way. But that's what got me interested.
Yeah, that's interesting. And then 20 years later, still loving it.
Funnily enough, yeah, I mean, I do genuinely enjoy my job. I get to speak to very accomplished, interesting people about a topic that I find genuinely interesting, and thank God for that. You know, because it would be a pretty crap job if I weren't interested in it. But no, I do. I really enjoy the rhythm of it, you know, because my job, you know, is all about sort of staying on top of what's happening at any given moment. And I love being able to see, you know, trends rising and falling and new themes emerging and things like that. So, I mean, there's elements of it that are a little bit boring. There are conversations that are getting a little bit repetitive because they're the same conversations we've been having for a long time. But by and large, it's a fascinating topic because it hooks into so many other things. These days, you know, it hooks into military power, it hooks into politics, it hooks into information. It touches everything. And I think that's why I find it so addictive still.
Yeah. So that leads on to my next question quite nicely is, what have you learned over 20 years? How have you seen the industry change, or how have you seen society as a whole around the cybersecurity conversation really change over the time in the position that you've had?
I think the one thing that I would say to sort of illustrate the change would be when I used to tell people in the early 2000s what I did for a living, they looked extremely bored. Extremely bored. I mean, I may as well have told them I worked in a cardboard box factory, right? Like, it was that level. Whereas now you tell someone, now it's different because you just sound like an asshole saying, I do a cybersecurity podcast, right? Like, how do you even say that with a straight face?
Oh, not another one.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's just like, you know, every wannabe, I mean, there's a lot of wannabes who will say that they're, you know, podcasters or Instagram influencers or whatever. And I just, you know, I hate it because this is my life's work, you know. But I guess, you know, when I tell people, yeah, I do a podcast about, you know, about cybersecurity or information security. Now people are very interested in that. And I think that's because there's a recognition out there among everyday people that this stuff is important and that this stuff is high impact and that this stuff can have impacts on elections. It can have impacts on critical infrastructure. It can have impacts on privacy, on surveillance, on all sorts of things. So I think that's the change, right? Is the stakes are so much higher, and that's what makes it all the more interesting.
Yeah, and I think further to your point there that more and more people are getting exposed to it too. So I think they're all seeing the movie where someone can go on and hack the United States military and blow up everything because they can control the computer and whatever. I think there's always been a general fear around that. But now I talk to people and everybody knows someone who's been hacked or they've been hacked themselves. And it's just, it's such a pervasive thing that we're in now. Would you agree with that, Patrick?
I think so. And I think there's that fear. You know, a lot of people have fears around their privacy now. I don't think it's necessarily a healthy way for a society to function, to be honest, right? With that constant background Black Mirror-esque anxiety, it sort of changes you, right? So yeah, I think it is a whole different ballgame now. It's absolutely a different ballgame.
Yeah. No, that's really interesting. So I'd like to learn a little bit more about the podcasting thing, because you don't get to talk about it a lot on your show because people don't come to talk about podcasting.
One of my podcasting rules is when anyone ever asks me for advice about podcasting, the first bit of advice I give is no one cares what you did on the weekend. But, yeah, it's in that same vein, but yes.
Oh, I reckon we do that at the start of every podcast. And I bet when this one goes to live, they'll be going, you know, what were you up to this week, Robert? but yeah, what other tips have you got for people who want to get into it? You know, is it as hard as you think it is? Is there any sort of easier, well-worn paths? Are there any big mistakes you see apart from the one that you just picked?
I think the thing you got to remember is it's work. It's a job, right? Like there's nothing wrong with doing a podcast. I mean, like you guys are doing a podcast, which isn't your main gig, right? Like there's nothing wrong with doing that. And I think that it's good. I mean, there's some really good stuff getting posted out there all the time. Sometimes you find some really interesting interviews on quite obscure podcasts, and that can be, that can be incredibly rewarding. I guess, it depends what you want to do with it. I mean, if you're asking for tips for success, as in I want to do something that, you know, people in a very specific niche are going to find interesting. I mean, I'm sort of going around in circles here, but okay. What would I say? I would say to be successful in doing a podcast, define your audience before you start. So, and gear everything towards that audience. So who do you want your audience to be? And then just create content that is of interest solely to that audience. I think that's the thing. Don't try to be all things to all people. You know, don't try to boil the ocean. I can imagine that there are so many sub niches in security now that you can do podcasts for developer security, app security. You could do an entire podcast for SIEM analysts and that would work, you know, if the content was sufficiently targeted. So I think it is about going niche and doing something that nobody else is doing. And of course, there are lots of security podcasts now, but there weren't really back then. There were a couple, right? So that's what I think people should do, is just really find that audience that isn't being served and go serve it.
Yeah, that's a great piece of advice. And as far as getting started, you know, I use a $200 microphone and we're currently recording this on Microsoft Teams. So what normally used to cost a lot of money to get started in these things, you can literally just try it out, put it out there, see if the world reacts to it. And then if they don't and you haven't marketed it properly or people aren't interested.
Well, in terms of marketing it, I mean, the clearest path, and it's, you know, everyone knows this, the clearest path to getting your show known about is to interview high profile people and then they'll promote it for you, right? Like that's, you know, that's the shortest path. But that'll get people to check out maybe one episode, and then it's up to you to make sure that the bulk of your content is interesting, you know. But yeah, you're right, it's the barriers to entry are not really there anymore. But you know, also be brutal in your edits, take out any fluff, keep things moving. I think there's a lot of waffle out there, and I think, but you know, the one bit of feedback I consistently get from people who regularly listen to my show is that one of the reasons they listen to it is because of the brevity, right? They like it that it's pacey and it keeps moving. But you know, other people, the big podcast boom has all been about these, you know, long form stories with atmospheric cello music about unsolved crimes, right? So you know, my audience, maybe not the typical podcast audience. I don't know. I'm always wary of like trying to tell people like how to succeed in podcasting, because I think everyone's, you know, path to success in this medium is so unique, right?
Yeah, and I agree. And, you know, we do a news podcast, but then we have evergreen sort of interview content. So we get some really interesting interviews come in that don't really age. Yeah. But the news in front of them, Microsoft's releasing this new thing called Windows 10, probably isn't as relevant as, you know, a few years ago as it is now. So
Journal of Record, the Journal of Record, keep it in the archive. It's good. Maybe an archaeologist will find it one day.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. So yeah, I think that's some really good stuff for people to think about, because people come to me and go, oh, wow, you do a podcast. And I'm like, it's not that big a deal, actually. Sorry.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm not even that good at it.
Now you've just hit on why it's so awkward when I actually have to say that's what I do for a living. Do you see what I mean?
You're in between work then.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, that's exactly it. Oh, God.
So, Patrick, where do you reckon we're going to in the future in the InfoSec space? We've seen a lot of, you know, we talk a lot about Microsoft technologies on this podcast and where that's going and their vision, but that's only one piece of the security story. As someone who's across most of it, where do you think the podcast, where do you think security is going?
I just think, you know, what we've seen is the dial getting turned up, right? Especially over the last sort of 5-10 years. And I just think that's what's going to continue. We're going to see the dial going further and further up. That said, I do think for the first time, it's possible to, you know, the path to securing networks and information is better understood than it ever has been. And I think we are making some progress in terms of understanding what works and what doesn't. So I think we are going to see just more mayhem. We're going to see big incidents. I mean, the number of times my jaw has hit the floor in the last 5 years covering this stuff, it's just, you know, all of this unthinkable stuff happening, like shadow brokers, right? The NSA getting their tools popped. Like that's not a story you expect to come across your desk as part of your morning brief, right? Like that is not... Yeah, right. So there's been a lot of wild stuff happen. So I think we're going to still see stuff that is unpredictable and surprising and crazy. But I think also that we're going to see some organizations just having quiet wins, because you don't hear about the ones that are doing well. And they're going to be doing some of the basics, right? Some of the boring basics. They're going to have good authentication in place. They're going to have good monitoring in place. They're going to be able to limit the damage inflicted upon them by attackers. We're going to see people mitigating, coming up with decent mitigation strategies to deal with things like ransomware. So I think, you know, the good work that's being done, we're not going to hear about it because, you know, that doesn't sell newspapers or shift podcasts. but on the flip side, I do think we're going to see just all of the craziness as well, because, you know, let's face it, the internet's still growing, the number of devices connected to it is still growing, and it's making up a more and more it's an increasingly critical part of everything. So yeah, it's gonna stay interesting at least until I'm retired, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think there'll be a job for you in the future. That's my bet. I can't guarantee anything, but I'm pretty sure there's going to be security issues in the future. But anyway, probably time to wrap it all up. Thank you very much for being on the podcast, Patrick. I was really interested to reach out and get another podcaster on the show. We've had Troy before, but I don't think we typically get podcasters as such on the show. So this would be a bit interesting, and it has been. So I do appreciate you dropping by. For everyone at home who would like to find out more about your podcast or you or however, how would they get in contact with you? How would they get onto your podcast?
The podcast website is just risky.biz, or you can just search for Risky Business Podcast in, you know, whatever podcatching app you prefer. And I am Risky Business, one word, on Twitter. And Brenton, it's been a real pleasure for me to be on the other side of an interview for a change. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks, Patrick.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.